Midlands today with Tullamore Motors. The all-new Renault Zoe. Live the easy electric life. Tullamoremotors.ie. When people in the Midlands want to talk, they talk to Will Faulkner.
Oh, good morning. Are you melting yet? Keep the deodorant handy this morning. I wore a blue shirt to work today. Seemed like a good idea at the time. Short sleeves, I said. But this is going to show sweat patches, isn't it? There's no glamorous way or dignified way of wearing a shirt on a day like this, especially a blue one. Coming up today, are you comfortable that your teenager will soon be studying pornography in school? Is there any student accommodation to be found in Athlone or Carlow? This will be the worst year yet. But the Higher Education Minister, Simon Harris, is here to discuss from 9:30. Your question for him. Very welcome. And we catch up on all the sporting action over the last 7 days. Plenty to talk about in golf and GAA and various other sports. And if you were at a game over the weekend, I'm sure you're feeling the effects. Plenty of the lobster look on display. Plenty of the farmer's tan to be seen around the Midlands at the moment. And the sunny weather is here to stay. Not quite as hot midweek, but still very much summer feeling. 0818 300 103 is the Midlands 103 comment line. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103, especially if you happen to be near a thermometer. If it's safe to do so and you're in the car and you see some record temperature on the dashboard, please send it to me so we can keep track. Met Air is saying we probably won't set a record today, but we just might. It's going to be north of 30 degrees in many places. What's on the front pages this morning? The Irish Times is first to hand. Government may fund thousands of on-campus student beds, it says. Because around the country, there are many colleges that are building student accommodation. But with inflation, especially in construction and materials, they have decided to cancel or postpone their projects. For instance, there is a 16,000 euro a year charge facing students in Dublin, where universities say, well, that's what they would need to levy if they're to recover their investment. Students can't afford to pay 16,000 a year to live in Dublin, so they're just not going to build the accommodation. There's a quote here as well from the Technological University of the Shannon, formerly AIT. Josephine Feehily is the chair of its governing body. And she is warning of extreme concern about shortages of student accommodation in September. We are extremely worried about the autumn, she says, because the private sector that would have provided accommodation in the past is now occupied and unlikely to become unoccupied in September, largely by, unfortunately, the people from Ukraine. Oh, boy. Not to alarm people or to cause undue anxiety, especially those waiting on Leaving Cert results, and their results are coming out later than usual as well, just to add to this perfect storm. But if you are reasonably confident that you're going to get a place, whether it's in Athlone or Carlow, Maynooth, Dublin, Cork, wherever, now is the time to start making those inquiries about accommodation. Main story on the Irish Independent. Well, actually, you see, in the big photo, Limerick's Garode Hegarty celebrating after scoring his side's goal during the All-Ireland final against Kilkenny in Croke Park. 3 in a row for the tribesmen, and well done to them. A great performance by Kilkenny as well. And in fairness, the Cats were ruled out many, many times and they bounced back and they gave it their all. And it was quite competitive, but Limerick just slightly the better team yesterday in Croke Park. The main story, pornography to be studied in class under Junior Cert revamp, it says. So there's a segment called Relationships and Sexuality Education, and every so often they update this. And for a long time, the curriculum has very much looked at the negatives and the risk of pregnancy and the risk of STDs and all of the bad aspects of sex. But this new material, it says, will include conversation about consent, safe use of the internet, safe use of pornography, gender identity, sexual orientation, and healthy and positive relationships, and looking at some of the good aspects of that. And they also talk about addiction issues, and certainly if you're discussing pornography, it can be an addictive activity, and a very negative one as well. But it can be, you know, again, horses for courses. If you're into it and you're able to control it and it doesn't control you, again, each to their own. And the main story then on the Daily Star, Stokes not off scot-free. It says ex-Ireland ace busted and flown out to face court after a year. This is ex-Ireland soccer star Anthony Stokes, who will be in court today after being arrested in Scotland. The former Celtic player had dodged a sentencing hearing for bombarding his ex-girlfriend's dad with offensive texts, it says. And look at some of the others. Yeah, they've all got pretty much naked people on the front pages from beaches and other watering holes around the country. Everybody in bikinis. Well, obviously not the fellas in bikinis, but you get the idea. The Irish Examiner looks at what will happen in December politically, because Micheál Martin is due to step down as Taoiseach, and up will step Leo Varadkar as Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael do their little switcheroo, this rotating Taoiseach idea. However, there are some in Fianna Fáil who see it as an opportunity. They don't want Micheál Martin leading them into the next general election, which he has pledged to do. And they say if he doesn't step down as leader, as well as Taoiseach, in December, they will not allow Leo Varadkar to rise to that office. They will bring down the government, in other words. Some of these rebels include John McGuinness, who is a long-time critic of Micheál Martin. He is the Fianna Fáil TD in Carlow Kilkenny. And how many others he speaks for remains to be seen. But that could become quite a headache, not just in Fianna Fáil, but in Fine Gael as well. Now, let's go inside the papers. Anything interesting here? Yeah, just on the student accommodation crisis, the fact that many hotels, many B&Bs, many private homes have been booked by Ukrainian refugees, it's also a problem for tourism operators. And Youghal, that great East Cork town, one of Ireland's oldest Victorian beach destinations, as a little fact, they are having huge difficulty because two local hotels are entirely booked out with refugees. And the Chamber of Tourism and Development says the pubs, the restaurants, all of those businesses that depend on tourists are really struggling and have now 3 years of a struggle under their belt, the two previous ones being hampered by COVID-19. So, for instance, it introduces you to Pádraig Hennessy. He runs the famous Clancy's Bar, which is right on the Strand in Youghal, beautiful place. And he is looking at tumbleweed blowing through for much of the week. Busy enough at weekends, but midweek, not so much. No tourists staying in town, it seems. All right, weather-wise today. Expect temperatures in the low 30s in many parts of the Midlands. And then as we go into the week, showers and cloudy conditions shall return, and it'll be a little bit cooler. I say a little bit because we will have temperatures of 22 to 26 degrees tomorrow. Wednesday cooling a little bit further. They're talking 18 to 22 degrees. So still pleasant, just not stiflingly hot. But today the UV index is going to be very high. So if you're outdoors, then make sure you put on the sunscreen. And do let me know how warm it gets where you are. At least it's not as bad as France. So they're preparing today for forest fires. And there are 15 regions of the country on their highest state of alert for wildfires and other havoc. And they are very conscious in the hospitals as well that many, particularly elderly people, will be brought in for heat stroke. They're looking at temperatures of 42 degrees in many parts of the country. And even in London, Londoners are being told not to travel unless it is absolutely essential. The British Met Office predicting 38 degrees in the city, which would make it hotter than the Caribbean, Western Sahara, many of Europe's most popular holiday destinations. Stay in London. It's warmer there. Warmer than Athens, Malaga, Greece, Albufeira. The list goes on. So, yeah, it might be hot in Ireland today, but it's not nearly as bad as it is across the Irish Sea. Where, by the way, the next Tory party leader will probably be either Penny Mordaunt or Rishi Sunak. Now, Penny Mordaunt has Irish roots, which have been revealed in the Irish Times today. She had a connection going back to the 1600s in County Wexford. Her family is of Norman origin. But her great-great-grandfather, Edward, he was involved in the Land League. And he tried to ensure that if land was grabbed from evicted tenants, that their land would not be sold at market. And he was jailed. And he eventually died in prison. And then there are many other examples of her more recent descendants fighting either against the British or later on for the British in the First World War. So Penny Mordaunt, with very genuine Irish roots, whether that would make a blind bit of difference in Brexit negotiations, Northern Irish Protocol negotiations, who knows? But she remains the favourite to succeed Boris Johnson. You can read about her background in the Irish Times. If you're a fan of Meghan and Harry, or just Harry, as the case may be, a new book reveals how Meghan was princessy and had no sense of humour the first time she met his friends. So the Duke invited 16 pals on a shooting party, as you do, in Sandringham, of all places. Anyway, we told some jokes from Eton and so on, and a bit of banter and, anyway, a little bit of sexism and feminism and so on. Anyway, the princess did not approve, and she corrected every single person who made a joke that was not woke and did not correspond with her values. And anyway, there were many texts which went between the lads afterwards. Oh my God, what about her? Harry must be effing nuts. And so, this has been revealed in a new book. Yes, somebody's selling a book. It's called Revenge. Meghan, Harry, and the War Between the Windsors. Apparently she has no sense of humour, it says. Anyway, we will see. Some stories you may have missed over the weekend. Brian in Portlaoise sends on from the Mail on Sunday how many politicians, despite salaries of €70,000 a year for senators, €100,000 per year for TDs, they're finding it hard to survive on travel expenses of up to €30,000 a year, he says. Imagine, says Brian, if the poor little darlings had to live on the current social welfare rates. Will, I fail to understand how many refugees and asylum seekers can be supported in Ireland. We need to know the numbers. Remember, it is all of our taxpayers' money the government is spending. Well, we had that conversation on Friday on the panel even. Liam Brereton from Eden Derry, from the Boxing Club, St. Bridget's Boxing Club. He has given space to people from Ukraine who very much deserve a roof over their heads and are trying to flee a conflict situation. However, his electricity bill has gone up as a result. His water usage has gone up as a result. And because the boxing club is the boxing club, they have to pay higher rates than if they were a charity, for instance. And they're not getting any state support, unlike the hotels and the other accommodation providers who are making a small fortune out of this situation. So it seems if you're doing it out of the goodness of your heart, you're very much on your own, Jack. If you're doing it for profit, you get a big subvention. So yeah, that's not very fair. And how long is that going to be the situation before somebody cries foul? One more. Will, what did Mrs. Faulkner think of the broken glass? This is from Pat in Road. Well, yeah, how do I put this across? You know when you've got weeds and you spray the weeds and they die, but they are still there. They just wither. It's not like they disappear. It's not like you put on something and they just disintegrate. So you have to either get out the hoe or you pluck them with gloves or you can get the lawnmower, as I did on Saturday. And over the weeds I went and had it on a good low setting and didn't notice a stone in among them, a stone which catapulted from the lawnmower straight off the glass on the patio door. So it's been redecorated. And she was away at the time. And let's just say she definitely noticed when she got home. Still to discuss today, are you comfortable with your teenager studying pornography in school? The messaging matters, doesn't it? It's really a question of what approach will be taken. And we will find out after the news at 10. And also, if you notice a van being pulled by a large group of people somewhere between Newbridge and Rathangan, well, they're not broken down. You don't need to grab the tow rope. There's a very good reason they're doing it. And we shall share a little more after 11 o'clock this morning. Now, a lot to discuss with the Higher Education Minister, Simon Harris. Accommodation. Also, a new apprenticeship programme being launched here in the Midlands. So let's say good morning to Simon Harris. Good morning.
Good morning, Will. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. Let's start with the good news. So you are announcing the first ever scaffolding apprenticeship programme. Why are you setting this up?
I am indeed. So I'm on my way to the Mount Lucas Training Centre in Offaly, and I suppose we're making four pretty significant announcements today. Firstly, as you say, we're announcing a scaffolding apprenticeship. And we're announcing this because, quite frankly, we need to really increase the skills working in the construction sector. We know that we need about 51,000 more people working in construction, working in the trades by 2030. And the role of a scaffolder is a really important role, but it's important that you provide people with opportunities to train. It's important that you have a model in place like apprenticeships where people can earn and learn at the same time. So Mount Lucas will now be home to this national scaffolding apprenticeship. And I suppose that brings me to the second thing we're announcing today. We'll be formally opening a scaffolding training unit at Mount Lucas. This is a 650 square metre training centre where our apprentices will be trained. I think there's about 51 people registered on the apprenticeship programme already. Thirdly, today we're announcing a multi-million euro expansion of the NZ retrofitting centre in Mount Lucas. Many people in your region will be familiar with the fact that Mount Lucas has really been leading the way when it comes to retrofitting training. There's been a lot of conversations about climate action, retrofitting 500,000 homes. We need people to do this. At the moment in Mount Lucas, they can train about 2,000 people. We will increase the capacity to 4,000. So very, very excited. This is the first capital project we're approving in this space. And then the final bit of news this morning on the Mount Lucas site is we're also turning the sod. What we're calling a new modern method of construction demonstration park. And this is basically going to be a flagship project where people from right around the country, people working in construction, will be able to come and see new experimental ways of constructing things, new modern methods, learn more and indeed be upskilled if required. So a busy day at the Mount Lucas site.
Indeed, yeah. It's become a centre of excellence for construction training. Yeah. Many of us will remember it was idle for many years. Fawcett had created the centre and became a white elephant, and then under the auspices of LOETB, it's really, really taken off. Can we talk about timetables then? So the apprenticeship programme will be available when?
It's available now. So we're formally launching it now. Some people have already registered, so it's available now and it's underway. And I think, I don't have the number in front of me, but I think there's about 51 people currently registered on it. So it's up and running. And the scaffolding training unit is ready to go as well. On the NZ retrofitting centre today, we'll move to design and planning. So what I'm doing today is giving the go-ahead for the money for the capital expansion. And now, obviously, it'll be up to LOETB. And I just want to really acknowledge the excellent work they've been doing in developing this site to get on with the design and planning of it. And we'll support them every step of the way. And on the demonstration park, there's about 2 to 3 months' work to do in terms of scoping this out. And then we reckon there's a 12-month delivery time, so about a year and a half for that one.
But just on the end, Zeb, on the retrofit training, and this will be of interest to a lot of Bordenimona workers, going from 2,000 to 4,000 capacity, how long is that going to take?
Well, being truthful, it'll be as soon as we can get this through planning and design. And so I don't have a specific time frame in relation to that, but we'll be moving mountains to get this done as quickly as possible, because I need to make sure there's 17,000 more people working in retrofitting to deliver on the government's climate action agenda. So there's already capacity, and I should say this to anybody listening to this programme today, there's already capacity in our training centres around the country, including in Mount Lucas, if you want to get trained in retrofitting. A lot of people listening to this programme might think retrofitting is a big, long course. It's not. It's actually 2 to 3 days on average for somebody who's already skilled in construction. And what you're doing is future-proofing yourself for an area where there's going to be a massive growth in work. You can already see it. So we'll be moving quickly on this, but obviously design and planning are outside of our control, so as quickly as possible.
Those are some of the positive stories, Minister. If I can bring you on to a challenge that a lot of students are facing, and they face it every year, particularly in Athlone and in Carlow and at many other places where third level colleges reside. Accommodation is going to be at a premium this year because of the Ukrainian situation. And Josephine Fihely, for instance, who's the chair of the governing body of the Technological University of the Shannon, formerly AIT, she is extremely worried, she says, about the autumn, because many in private accommodation will remain there. It will be permanently occupied, she says, by people from Ukraine, and she does not know when that will be unoccupied again. How are you going to manage this situation in only a few weeks, Minister?
So, there's a couple of parts to this. I mean, it's not enough to just be worried. We have to actually take action. So we're approaching this college year with more accommodation in place than previous years. And there's about 600 additional on-campus college accommodation units this year compared to last year. And in Galway, there's another 674 due to come on stream, not by September, but during the course of the academic year. There is more accommodation coming on stream. However, let's be clear, I don't believe the current policy is delivering. And that's why, as I see as reported on the front page of the Irish Times this morning, I want to put in place a new model, and perhaps I can get to that in a moment. But just in terms of this September, there will be more accommodation than there was in previous years. The second thing we're doing in relation to this September is highlighting the fact to homeowners that there is a scheme in place where you can rent a room in your home out to a student or indeed to anybody else, and you can actually earn €14,000 a year before you pay any tax. And the rent-a-room scheme is a scheme that had worked extremely well in previous years. I think it's fair to say over the last few years we had a bit of a perfect storm, because with everybody coming back to college after the COVID period, plus people being reluctant to maybe have somebody else in their home because of COVID, we saw a significant reduction, I think, in people offering to rent a room. We're now really pushing and pursuing that scheme again, with colleges right across the country promoting that in their region. But I've got to be very clear and honest with people, because I can't just look September to September. We also have to actually change the model. And what you'll see reported this morning is I want to, for the very first time, subvent colleges to actually build student accommodation. And the government has already taken a decision to subvent private developers to build apartments. And if we can do that, we need to actually start subventing colleges to build accommodation. And if you just take Athlone as an example, up until a couple of months ago, Athlone never had permission to access government borrowing to build student accommodation. We've now changed that. So every technological university can now apply for cheap government borrowing to build student accommodation. And my message to the technological universities would maybe get your plans in, let's get going here, let's actually do something that hasn't been done before and actually start building at large scale, affordable, college-owned accommodation and not just be reliant on the private market.
So, for instance, when we read in the Irish Times how DCU, which has permission for a 1,240-bed student village, isn't proceeding because of rising construction costs, you feel this subvention will negate the inflationary effect?
I've no doubt the subvention I'm planning will free up these projects to get work going again. And DCU is one example, but there are other examples. I mean, we're in the middle of a housing crisis, and I have a sector that has land, that has planning permissions, and that could build thousands of student accommodation units. It can only do that. If we make sure what I call the market failure issue is overcome. And that will only be overcome, in my view, by public subvention. I'm not talking about free money here. I'm talking about the state taking an equity share in the student accommodation facility. So I've been working extremely hard on this since my department was established to basically change the student accommodation policy in this country so that it's not all about the private market building student accommodation and then charging students very, very high rent. But it's actually about trying to build up a stock of college-owned accommodation at affordable levels. Now, you've got to be blunt about this, Will. That's not this September, I get that. And this September, we have to manage as best we all can. We do have more facilities in place than last year. We are promoting the rent-to-room. But what I want is to see a pipeline of projects, of thousands of units, going to construction. And I want to see the state step in and help make sure that happens.
So the scheme to provide this subvention, that will be available to third-level institutes from when?
So I went to the Cabinet Committee on Housing about 2 weeks ago. My officials will now work with colleagues in the Department of Housing and Public Expenditure and Reform, and I'd be hoping we can have the details of the scheme this year. We have quite a lot of projects with active planning permission that we could get going. And that's, you know, often the delay in delivering housing projects is either a lack of land, or having to transfer land from one agency to the other, or having to get planning permission. In this case, we don't have those challenges. I've been on the land. We have the public land, or at least the college-owned land. We have the planning permission. We just need to address the gap, I suppose, the viability gap between building or not building. And we've been I want to acknowledge the sector has been working really closely with us. My department's worked really, really hard on this. And when we pull this off, I believe it will be a game changer in the coming years for student accommodation.
But for this September, do you have a handle on how much former student accommodation is now occupied by refugees?
This is a slightly fluid situation. And again, when we talk about student accommodation, there are two forms we're talking about. Firstly, there's the college-owned student accommodation, which will be vacated and available for students for the new college year. The second and more complex issue, and one that is outside of my direct control, is where there is private accommodation and where people are, you know, taking out contracts or agreements to help in what is a very, very significant humanitarian crisis with people from Ukraine. And that is, I think, the situation that Josephine Feely is talking about, where it is possible that some private student accommodation blocks that are not owned by the state, that aren't controlled by the state, could have agreements to keep their accommodation available for Ukrainian students. So we don't have a definitive number yet. As you can see from any news headlines, the situation in relation to the number of people from Ukraine coming into our country and our huge efforts to accommodate and welcome and support people is very, very intensely being worked on by my colleague, Minister Roderick O'Gorman. But I mean, I am clear that student accommodation was built for the purposes of students using it. I think it's useful that the sector provided it temporarily to people from Ukraine. I think that was a good and right thing to do in terms of the national and global effort. But it was only ever meant to be a temporary solution whilst it provided the state with a little bit more time to find more medium-term solutions.
Just one final matter, Minister. All of this depends on you holding office long enough to see through many of these policies. A Fianna Fáil TD yesterday suggested that his party shouldn't vote for Leo Varadkar to become Taoiseach in December unless Micheál Martin is prepared to step down as party leader. Now, I'm referring to John McGuinness, the Carlow Kilkenny TD, and he says his party colleagues should refuse to back Fine Gael unless Micheál Martin does as they wish.
That's something that I will promote with colleagues at a parliamentary party meeting and accept then the consensus from that meeting in terms of the direction that we will eventually take.
What's your reaction to that, Minister?
Well, my first reaction is internal matters for Fianna Fáil are not a matter for me, obviously.
Yeah, but they could have consequences for you and your colleagues.
And I mean, the second point I would make is I do know Deputy McGuinness talks about he'll vote the way the consensus in his party suggests. And then I suppose the third point I'd make is, I mean, our agreement is bound and is grounded in a programme for government. We have a programme for government agreement. We have a very clear agreement as to what's going to happen in December in terms of the rotation of Taoiseach's office. And everybody is obviously working towards that moment. But crucially, everybody is working towards delivering on the programme for government. And we're in the midst right now of an extremely difficult situation from a humanitarian point of view in relation to Ukraine. And we're in the midst of probably the biggest cost of living crisis we've seen in decades, with people people in the Midlands and people right around the country really feeling the pinch on a daily basis in terms of their own family budget. We've brought forward the date of the budget to September, and we're planning two strands to that budget. One, a budget for 2023, but also a cost of living package, which we intend to announce on Budget Day in September. I mean, that's the absolute focus of everybody in government. I believe that's the focus of the three parties in government, and anything else, I suppose, is noise, and we need to keep focused on the job at hand. But I don't comment, obviously, on internal Fianna Fáil matters.
Simon Harris, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much, Will.
Minister Harris has responsibility for further and higher education, research, innovation and science. Still on the agenda this morning, why you will see a lot of bees in Loughborough Parklands in County Offaly. Also, why parents in Athlone stood in protest yesterday. Temperatures could hit 32 degrees in many parts of the Midlands. In fact, I've already been sent a car thermometer at 26.5. The person didn't say where they are. Love to know. And more hot weather is on the cards over the next 24 hours. A yellow high temperature warning is in place. These people in the Midlands have been sharing what they're getting up to make the most of the sunshine.
What I do to make the most of the fine weather is work hard every day, because I'm a farmer. And we still have to milk the cows and feed the calves and do all the farm work.
Sitting out, having a few glasses of vino.
When it's sunny, I like going over to the playground and playing on the big slide, and I like eating ice cream.
Sitting out, enjoying the sun, not cooking the dinner, putting my feet up and relaxing for the day.
I'm not cooking dinner because it's too warm. So it's dip and look up, as my mother would call it. So whatever's in the fridge is going to be eaten.
I like playing sports and going for cycles.
I'm going to sit out, enjoy the sunshine and catch up on all the washing, because it's a great day for drying.
I get my coffee in Tower and Bean, and I sit out in the beautiful monastic grounds of Timahoe, and I enjoy the sunshine and everything.
I'm making the most of eating all the meals outside, even the breakfast and the cup of coffee, getting all the clothes dried, there's great drying, and just down in tools and enjoying the fine weather.
Taking the kids to the beach from the most landlocked county in Ireland.
Chilling out, having a barbecue.
I like being out in the sun and cutting the lawn and just relaxing.
I like to go outside and kick the ball at my brother.
I like to go to the bogs, there's great drying on the turf, so, you know, nice to get home.
So, voices from County Leash enjoying the sunshine. And yes, nice plug there for Tower and Bean. So great coffee available in Timahoe, if you're interested. Good morning. Still to talk about today. Parents take to the streets of Athlone in protest. You'll meet them in half an hour. Why you'll be sorry if you don't visit Loughborough Park. There's a really, really bad pun in there, and I'll tell you what it is soon. Harry narrowly misses out on a top 20 fit. The Open. Your weekend sports review is at 20:11. When you call 0818 300 103 is my number. You can text or WhatsApp 083 30 10 103. Powered by Lamb Brothers Toyota in Tullamore. Changes to the Junior Cycle Sex and Relationships Programme will see areas such as consent and pornography included. Education Minister Norma Foley says the current curriculum is outdated and it needs to be reformed. So she will soon publish the SPHE and RSE draft programme at the Department of Education. But this is her philosophy when it comes to keeping the programme contemporary and accessible.
The curriculum is in fact 20 years old, so as Minister I'm very, very keen that we move it on, that it's contemporary and accessible for our students. But the students have said that much of what they're getting is outdated really, and it's not current enough, and it's too little, too late and too biological, and specifically even around areas of consent. It is hugely important that students can appreciate the importance of giving and receiving consent in relationship.
So let's talk about the change. And if you have teenage children, or they're perhaps younger even, and they'll soon be going into secondary school, this is something that you will take an interest in, because it's all about how it's presented. It's all about the messaging and whether you agree with it or not. So let's find out what the existing messaging is. John Irwin is the General Secretary of Community and Comprehensive Schools. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Will.
The Minister mentioned the existing programme being 20 years old. So, look, I'll go first. It's more than 20 years since I left school. And I suspect for a lot of people listening, the same is true. So can you describe what's in place at the moment?
Yeah, what's in place at the moment is a programme or a set of specifications that were put in place in 1997. So as you can see, they are dated. Is that okay? And in those, now the PDST, that's the Professional Development Service for Teachers, and they've invested quite a bit of time in trying to upskill people to try and make sure it's as relevant as possible. But you're dealing with a programme that is now outdated. Like if you take a look at when it was written, not every child in the country was walking around with a mobile phone or basically a computer device in their hand. Mm. So like, you know...
Yes, if you wanted to access pornography, you had to awkwardly shuffle into a newsagent and grab Playboy off the top shelf. Yeah, I'm speaking from personal experience there, obviously. Yeah.
Well, okay. But what you...
We were all young once, John.
We were all one, correct. But what you're looking at now is something that is totally, is totally different in terms of how people are accessing information. And it's at their fingertips. So in that particular aspect of it, you do need to update the curriculum. You do need to update exactly what is there. We've also seen huge, significant changes in legislation in Ireland. Is that okay? We've seen huge changes in the whole area of seeking and giving consent. And even in terms of developments within Irish education, you have seen the voice of the students becoming far more prominent in terms of being able to express their views on, look, this is what we are experiencing. We, as the people who are receiving the education within the school, this is our actual current experience. And they're telling us, this isn't fit for purpose. So we have to listen. And we have to be able to be there to try and see, can we develop programs that are meaningful for the students that are in our schools today? And we'll give them, the information and the guidance they require.
Messaging is key, though, especially in a sensitive area like pornography, because parents will, I suppose, on one hand, they will probably be checking search histories and they'll be watching to see whether their child is curious about things that perhaps they shouldn't be, or at least that their parents would be more comfortable if they weren't looking at. So how do you try and explain pornography in a way that doesn't pique their curiosity more than it should, I suppose? When you hear no, some people hear yes.
And it is very, very difficult. And there's no point in saying that it's not difficult and it's not sensitive. But by the same token, there's no point in ignoring the fact that, children can access pornography. That's the reality of the world we now live in. And there is, what we talk about, the internet is one of the most brilliant communication devices and social media and everything has so many positives. But there are also significant risks. And really, it's important that particularly for young people, if they access any of this, that they realize that, look, this isn't real. Is that okay? This isn't what relationships are about. Is that okay? This is, in many cases, it's abuse. Is that okay? And that's what it is. So, look, they need to be able to make informed decisions and realize and get some idea of what they're experiencing. It may not, in the vast majority of cases, not healthy.
Mm. Apart from the conversation about pornography, there will be some discussion about the positive aspects of relationships as well.
And
many of us went to school at a time when it was almost demonised. I remember the video being put on and the parish priest standing there watching everybody, and the lady on the screen was talking about how God had created man and God had created woman and so on, and it was very much of Catholic Ireland. And these days it's more secular, obviously. So what is the way you pitch relationships to a teenager these days?
Well, relationships, in terms of even in the current RSE programs, that has moved on substantially. To reflect and to take account of, we've had the same sex marriage legislation. We've had lots of changes in terms of the recognition of gender in Irish society, and schools have to be welcoming places for absolutely everybody. who attends the school. The churches all have their important role to play, and the churches, many of them, not just the Catholic churches, are patrons in many of our schools. But they themselves are quite open-minded and have become far more open-minded in terms of the way that these issues are approached. Yes, there will be sensitivities. Obviously, these are hugely sensitive issues. And there will be parents out there who will have particular concerns, and they will want to be kept informed. They have been consulted today through the National Parents Council. But, you know, you will find parents who will have significant concerns. Now, under the Education Act, they can still object on a conscientious basis regarding any educational programs that are offered within schools. It's rare that they actually do, being honest, but they can.
Well, talk to us about this consultation, because again, the parents of today did not have the feedback 20 years ago into that program. Yeah. So how does it work?
Yeah, but look, what you would be looking at in terms of how it works is obviously it's the minister ultimately can prescribe what is important in terms of the curriculum. They established the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment under the Education Act, who are basically the advisors and policy advisors to the minister. And the minister will ask them to go and research and will ask them to present the information back to the minister as to what the requirements are for students and an appropriate education for students today. In terms of that, they will consult with parent bodies, they'll consult with student bodies, they'll consult with what they describe as all interested, other interested stakeholders. They will consult with management bodies in schools, and they will consult with patrons of schools. They will all be consulted and be a fairly broad range right the way across, but they will go out to other interested stakeholder groups that are in society. They will send out the draft, they will take back, and they will reflect on any of the particular issues that are there. But ultimately, the aim is to devise a program which is appropriate for students of today and will be available to all students of today. Whether all students access it or not, well, there are elements of that where you can have conscientious objection.
So how long does it usually take from the point of public consultation, which we're coming to a programme eventually being rolled out in a school?
You're probably looking at least the next full academic year that the consultation would go on through. And then you would probably, if they can reach, what they believe is a good balance for a programme that is there, you could be looking within the academic year following that, or within two academic years.
John,
they do give time, Will, to these consultations.
Well, it gives parents a chance to reflect on how they would like the programme to run, and then
Absolutely, do get involved.
And if you don't get involved, I suppose you lose the right to complain afterwards. Thanks very much for your time, John.
No problem, Will. Bye.
John Irwin from the Association of Community and Comprehensive Schools. 083 30 10 103 on text and on WhatsApp. It's one of those things. I've a 7-year-old and an 8-year-old at home. You just don't want to ever think they're growing up and going to have that conversation with you one day. But they will, and that's life and that's natural. So when it happens in the school environment, you want to make sure that they're on song with whatever your own message is. 083 30 10 103 again, text and WhatsApp if you've had that conversation recently. Or indeed, if you're concerned, if you don't think schools should be addressing the issue of pornography. It's rather naive, I would suggest, respectfully, because it is just everywhere. If they have a smart device, they have access to it. It's not like the case 20, 30 years ago. They are not as sheltered as their parents were. Well, temperature in Durrow in County Offaly, 24 degrees. You won't believe this, but I also felt a few drops of rain falling. Wow. Looking out the window, I don't see any sign of cloud. A bit hazy, perhaps. Depends where you are, I suppose. Text from Jackie in Mullingar, 23 degrees in town. And a caller from Boris in Ossory says it's also 23 degrees there. So the day is heating up. Now, Simon Harris, the Higher Education Minister, was here earlier discussing student accommodation, among other things. And Aidan says, it sounds like the Minister is encouraging greedy speculators who rent houses to students during term and kick them out after term with their luggage so they can make even more money when they're off college. And a different caller says, in fairness to Simon Harris, he's one of the good guys. Does he ever miss the health portfolio, I wonder? That's from Michaela. Morning, Michaela. Will, great day to be alive, says Martin in Moat. Indeed, every day is a great day to be alive. Regarding the lawnmower story, please do not have children around when mowing the grass. Imagine if that stone had hit a child in the head. Keep safe. Yes, that did occur to me, all right. In fact, only a few minutes beforehand, I had sent them scurrying. And, well, a stone was thrown up by the lawnmower, ended up smashing the patio door. At some speed, I can tell you. Nearly as fast as I ran when herself got home. Well, yesterday afternoon, we were travelling from Tullamore to Giessle. The temperature was 29 degrees Celsius. Ah, yeah. Yes. And it's going to be the warmest day of the year. So I hope you've something nice planned to make the most of it. Let's move on to other stories. And plans for Ireland's first ever Centre of Excellence for Beekeeping are being unveiled here in the Midlands today. The Irish Bee Foundation is building a new facility in Loughborough Parklands in County Offaly. And it is supported by local company Lumclune Energy and their Korean partners Hanaway Energy. The president of the Federation of Irish Beekeeper Associations, Paul O'Brien, has been telling Midlands 103's Ellen Butler it'll be used as a teaching and visitor centre to promote biodiversity.
We're delighted to announce that FIBCA, the Federation of Irish Beekeeping Associations, have been looking for a spiritual and a physical home now for the last 25 years. We've been together as an organisation for more than 80 years, and we've always been guests of all kinds of facilities, especially Gormanstown in Westmeath. And we'd like to get our own location, so we were looking for a location, and with the help of Barry Cowan and Lumclune Energy there in Tullamore, they invited us to look at a site right next door to Loughborough Discovery Park, and suggested that this would be an ideal location. And after looking at the site and where it is, it would be an ideal location. So we're pleased to announce that we're going ahead with this location.
And what will be undertaken there?
Currently, we will use it as a teaching area for beekeepers to learn the art of beekeeping. But we have a 5 to 6 year plan to build a visitor centre so that members of the public can come and see the art of beekeeping and what's involved and what's entailed. And all the other solitary bees and bumblebees, we'll be including all them in this visitor centre too, as an education and awareness. And it'll be a go-to location for tourists, as we will be beside an already thriving park, Loughborough. It's an added feature for them that they can visitors can come and enjoy and listen and learn what the bees and the beekeepers are doing in Ireland.
So is it fair to say, Paul, this is the first of its kind in Ireland then, this kind of centre?
This will be the first of its kind in Ireland, and if you go to other European capitals and other European cities, they have this and have this for many years. As we've all observed over many years, and the start of the recycling campaign was started in the schools with the children under the green flag, and look at it now, everybody washes their cartons out and puts their cardboard in the right box. We've had nothing to help or bring awareness to the bees in our environment. And one of the things we did do in the last few years is we teamed up with NUIG in Galway, and we managed to get a level 7 diploma in science and beekeeping, and that's oversubscribed at the moment. And there's a lot of young graduates and transition year students entering things into the young beekeeper, young scientists, and they're also looking for various things in the beekeeping world that we don't look at. We're a small island, and we have a great opportunity here to improve the beekeeping environment all over Europe with our native bees, and as well as that, to teach the youth this new opportunity, because there's many and many opportunities, but it was never really observed or looked at because we never had a spiritual place to do all this.
Okay, and of course the people might not be aware just fully of the extent, but the importance of bees just cannot be underestimated when it comes to our ecosystems.
Well, absolutely. At the moment, we have about 4,000 beekeepers in the country trying their best to keep the art and the hobby. Most of them are hobbyists, not a lot of them are professionals. And we produce about 7% of the domestic consumption of honey. That's about all we can supply. So the rest is imported. So there's a whole opportunity there for us to fill up that gap with the youth and get them involved. And if you go down to your local supermarket and looked at the vegetables section and took away all the coloured fruits and all the coloured vegetables, they're all pollinated by some pollinators, and bees and bumblebees are the primary pollinators.
Okay, well, look, in terms of the practical level, Paul, when would this centre be up and running, do you think?
Well, we'll have to start a fundraising campaign, and we'll have to get off the blocks from next Monday. And as I said, we're delighted that Lum Clune has helped us in the first tranche of this. But it will be a five-year plan, hopefully, to get it off the ground and get it into a visitor centre.
Okay, all right. And in terms of costs and that kind of thing, have you an idea yet?
We will put all that out, and we'll start a campaign to invite the members of the public to get involved. And that's a bit down the road, but we hope to get this done within 5 years.
Another great reason to visit Loughborough Parklands in County Offaly. One of many great destinations we have in the Midlands, and there's, no better country in the world when the sun is shining. Ireland just looking stunning. Saw a picture on WhatsApp from Loch Ree yesterday, and the water was just crystal, absolutely beautiful. And if you were out and about today and you've got the camera handy and you want to take a snap and it just stands out, do send it to me. We'll happily share your sunshine images. Still to come today, Shane Lowry narrowly missing a top 20 finish at the Open. Full sport from 20 past 11. And parents take to the streets of Athlone in protest. You'll meet them very soon. Ooh, dashboard pictures arriving on WhatsApp. Very posh cars, I must say. Very nice. 25 degrees in Abbey Leaks. Even diamonds are starting to sweat, it says. And ooh, where's this? Stradbally. Zooming in. 25 degrees in Stradbally. Oh, it's going to be a warm one. I hope you enjoy. Now, parents in Athlone took to the streets in protest this weekend. They were highlighting a lack of school places for children with autism, where many have to travel to surrounding counties for their education while their siblings attend local mainstream schools. Autism Parents Athlone says it welcomes the news that an additional needs class will be opened in Athlone Community College in September that will accommodate 6 students. And these parents say more classes are needed.
When do we want autism classes for everyone? When do we want them?
Now! I'm Michelle Lynch and I'm Gareth Barr's mammy. This marriage all came to light from me telling the Austin parents at Loan that there's no school places for secondary for Gareth. And that's when all the other parents got involved. And that's why we're here today doing this march. I don't know if I have a place for Gareth yet in September, as the Athlone Community College says we'll set up a unit, but whether it's ready or not, we don't know yet. Gareth has autism spectrum disorder. He's a very intelligent child, doesn't need much care, but he also has type 1 diabetes, which can be a struggle with a child with autism. But no, he's doing well, and he didn't come today, so it's not good with social circumstances.
Senator Micheál Carrigy from Longford, I'm also chair of the Joint Oireachtas Committee on Autism, and come here to support the parents. Claire and all that have been involved in the group that have highlighted this issue. I've been working with them over the last number of months to highlight it at the national level to make sure that we get a pass in place. An additional class has been announced for at Loughborough Community College in September. We also have an additional class in Ballymahon Vocational School, which covers this general environment. But we need to keep working and keep highlighting the issues that we can't have a situation arising again where parents don't know in June that where their child is going to have a place in a school in September. I think that's unacceptable. We need a special class in every single secondary school, and that children are entitled to be educated in their local community with their siblings, as I say, in their own local area. Not have a situation of people having to travel 20, 30 kilometres to get an education. That's unacceptable in this day and age.
Sharon Benny, 2 kids with autism, twins, a boy and a girl. And I've found a place for the girl in a special school, but I've no place for my son, Kyle. There is no spaces for him. And there's nowhere, but we're just hoping now the community college will take him in. That's my only option. Kiana, my daughter, she'd be non-verbal. And Kyle, he's only verbal since he was 7. So he'd have a lot of needs. He needs one-on-one nearly all the time.
It's a disgraceful the way the parents have to fight, look, for an education for their children, and they shouldn't be treated differently than anybody else. And I just wanted to come out and support my sister. She has twins. She has a place for one of her children, but the other one she hasn't. And I just want to support everybody else, and hopefully something will be done about it now.
My name is Claire Early. I'm founder of Autism Parents at Lawn. My daughter Sophia is 8 years old and she has autism. She attends the Rainbow Rooms in Summerhill National School. We're very lucky to have our school within 10 minutes away from our home. So basically why we're out here today doing what we're doing is our children in Athlone, a lot of them are being bused to different counties, and we want them here in the town. Our school, there's 3 major secondary schools in the town and they have no autism classes. We want them to open autism classes. We also want the primary schools to open autism classes. We don't want to see any of the children from Athlone and its surrounding areas to be having to travel outside the town. It's our community, they're our schools and they're our children, and they should have a choice.
I'm blown away with the turnout and the support and the collective support that we were all together going through the streets. The reaction from the town was so positive, from shops with people coming out waving, people beeping their car, all in support, and we were just so moved. And couldn't ask for better.
So I have 2 children on the autism spectrum out of 4 children. They are 5 and 3. Very happy, very clever. She struggles in terms of sensory issues. Her dad, but they love going to school. But unfortunately, because of the lack of appropriate school places for them in Athlone, I'm forced to separate my 4 children across 3 counties. In September, I will have a child in school in Ballinasloe. She's 5 years old and will be bused every day to 3. Old brother will be bused to County Westmeath into St Paul's School for early intervention, and the older 2 children will be attending our local school 3 kilometres from home, where they are across 3 counties: County Roscommon, County Westmeath and County Galway. I don't think it's right that 4 siblings from the same house that are steps of the stairs should not be able to attend school together, wherever that might be, and no child should have to be bused away out of their catchment area, out of their county and out of their community just because they have a diagnosis of autism.
Open your school, open your mind, and all we want is autism classes for Athlone. Where do we want them?
So, that report by Midlands 103's